happened yesterday?
Sarcomeres.
Sarcomeres happened yesterday.
Yep. You lectured on muscle.
I hope I didn't lecture on anything. I guess it is. Well, one of the things that happened yesterday is Barack Obama, did you hear about that?
No. Yeah.
In Florida, he got up and he said, there are no un-American Americans. There are no pro-American Americans. There are Americans. It doesn't make any difference if you live in Florida or Missouri or wherever you are. Generally, those people who live in all those places serve the country and provide service to the country and fight in wars and all those other things. So,
hallelujah!
And you know what that was in response to? That was in response to something they had the day before. Didn't have anything to Sarah Palin. Well,
yes,
it did. It's part of what she said. She said in Missouri or North Dakota or wherever it was she was, so she's really glad to be now in the real America.
So the pro-America.
No, what happened was that there's a senator, Republican senator, Republican representative from Minnesota, who came on one of the TV shows, said that she thought it'd be a really good idea if the media This is representative from Minnesota. We may not have any good ideas either. But she said that it would really be great if the media launched an investigation of the activities of members of Congress, the Senate, particularly, to find out which ones were pro-American, which ones were un-American. The one thing that's interesting that I find interesting every 4 years, whenever these presidential elections, is that I can never really comprehend the number of true idiots who live in this country. I mean, they hide in various places, and every 4 years, they all come out. And it's just.
And some of them are actually in charge.
And some of them actually believe what they say. That's what's really important. They believe what they say. They don't understand it at all. Okay, so that's what happened yesterday. Write that down. You
never know. That's what I was talking about. Yeah,
you
had
to leave that.
You had to leave grandma.
So tell me, if we talked about muscle and we talked about other things yesterday, tell me what you learned yesterday.
Barack Obama's grandma broke her hip.
Did Barack Obama what?
His grandma broke her hip.
That's right. Grandma, well, I didn't hear that she broke her hip.
Is it
well, how about I put it in quotation marks? Does that make you guys feel better?
You mean like hell?
No, she broke her hip. Yeah.
Well, and so he decided, what should he do? His loyal grandson.
Go back up.
Suspend his campaign.
And so he should suspend his campaigning so he can go and take care of the family emergency. And by God, he probably might actually do that. Unlike John McCain spending his campaign to take care of the economy.
12 times.
For a day. What else did you learn? Pardon?
The polls didn't like it. He could spend his campaign. Everyone didn't like it. So he got back on the horse.
All right, got back on the horse. What else did you learn yesterday? I learned sarcomeres. Who else learned sarcomeres? Now, I don't want to know what you learned about. I want to know what you learned. Yes? Oh, okay. She learned that there's such a thing as temporal summation. And she didn't say anything about summation. So you learned that there's such a thing as spatial summation. All right. Okay. And what was that in context to? Action potential. That was. Well, now, does that mean that you get some action potential? Was there temporal summation and spatial summation of action potential? Membrane potentials that ended up producing or reaching the threshold for action potential. Okay. Did anybody else learn anything else? That you need to sleep the hours before midnight. Okay? And lots of hours sometimes after midnight. But you know what they always say? They always say that the hours that you spend before midnight are more restful than the hours that you spend after midnight. I think that's probably why when I go home and put on the TV to watch whatever we're watching, I always miss 2/3 of the things because I fall asleep. I didn't get to see Cloris Leachman.
I love her.
Dance with salsa last night. I just missed that.
Steve-o.
Yep.
If only you had a TiVo, okay. You could have watched it.
More than likely, you know. More than likely, I just love whales. You know, whales to me are just really, really neat. So periodically, over all the years on educational TV, they have this documentary or one of several documentaries about whales. And they have whale songs, and it's whales, it's so nice. I've never seen more than 15 minutes of one of those programs. And if I TiVo it and I try to watch it, same damn thing is going to happen. So I would recommend that those of you who have trouble sleeping, get a video about whales. It's really relaxing.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Well, that's okay. I have actually, you probably can't relate to this, but I have some records of whale song. A record is a 12-inch thing that's made out of vinyl. And I have other kinds of records. I have some records that are that big or so, and they're made out of, what are they made out of? They break very easily, but I forget what they're made out of. And they go on a turntable with a needle that goes around 78 revolutions per minute, and you get about 3 minutes on one side of one of these records.
Do you have an 8-track?
No, I threw away the 8-track years ago.
I have an 8-track.
Yay! Okay.
There were
players
when we were really little. I
didn't
think
they're
purple ones.
I know. Oh, okay. Well, my daughter. Is this relevant? That's okay. My daughter had a record player, her own records. Her record player had a bone. It was a Mickey Mouse record player, and it had a bone. Light blue, and she could pick up the bone, put on a record, hear all kinds of things about, like Peter Pan. You know Peter Pan? You know, if you believe in fairies, then clap your hands. Clap your hands. Tinker Bell will get well if you clap your hands. You believe in fairies, then clap. Now, I have a challenge for you. And the challenge is get that out of your head sometime in the next 3 hours. Okay, so you learned about things, learned about regular. Okay, what else did you learn? She learned sodium potassium. No, she didn't learn sodium potassium. Charles?
Rubber band stuff.
Recoil.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's how, and there's many sections of it, and as they all feel on track, my foot just gets shorter.
Okay. Yeah? It makes sense because I know what you're talking about. How many people don't know what he's talking about? What he said was, I learned that there are some things, he didn't say, these aren't his words, I'm paraphrasing, things in the muscle fiber that behave like rubber bands and have recoil. And when the actin and myosin move together, they pull on those rubber band-like things, and when the rubber band-like things recoil, if in fact you don't allow the ends of the muscle to move, you develop tension or force in that muscle. And that's really because those rubber band-like things are trying to recoil from being stretched.
I don't think you rephrased that.
Okay. So I guess what we want to do today is move forward a little bit and look a little bit more at this muscle. And so let's start by reviewing that piece of video, because I got a number of cards yesterday that said, could you put a link to those videos someplace? And I don't know where I put it or how to put it or anything like that. And some other people said, could you put those videos in the library? So I figured that you probably wanted to see them again. And they're so long and so involved that if you put it some sort of, if I actually could legally put them on the web someplace for you to get a link for them, it would take you longer to find the link than it would to watch the video. So let's watch them again for a moment here. Okay. And can you see it?
No.
No.
Is it here?
I can see it.
I don't get it.
Okay, there you go. Can you see it now? Here it goes. I'm going to go over this way.
The phenomenon of muscle contraction begins when calcium ions are released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum in response to an action potential that propagates along the transverse tubules.
Okay. You saw that, right? Yeah. You were sleeping. See it again.
The phenomenon of muscle contraction begins when calcium ions are released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum in response to an action potential that propagates along the transverse tubules.
Okay. So there are a couple things. First of all, we said that there was ADP and ATP. There's something in here. What the guy said is that calcium is released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. The first question we have to ask is, what the hell is a sarcoplasmic reticulum? Second question we have to ask is, where is the sarcoplasmic reticulum? Third question maybe we might want to ask is, how did calcium get in there in the first place? Ask me this. How did that, ask me the question. How did the calcium?
Where in the heck is the calcium?
I have no idea. I've always wondered that. Do you know the answer to that question? How did it get in there in the first place? Where did it come from in the first place? In the chicken and egg bottle, how did it get in there? I don't know. In the sarcoplasmic reticulum, not from the synapse. So that's a question we're going to have to ask ourselves someplace and see about why. So sarcoplasmic reticulum for me is, there are some issues. They're called SR issues. Sarcoplasmic reticulum issues. And what we saw then is that the that this calcium came down here. And what do you think made it come down here?
Gradient.
Gradient, all right. And bound to this troponin, which evidently I called tropomyosin yesterday. Thank you for correcting me about it. I wasn't speaking very well yesterday at all. My mouth and tongue and everything like that didn't work well. I'm amazed that you could decide what I was saying about anything. But then what happened is that, so the calcium came down, released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And let's say, for the sake of argument, that the sarcoplasmic reticulum resides up here someplace. Okay? And so calcium was released, and so one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, what caused it to be released? And he said something about T-tubules, so we have to ask ourselves, what is a T-tubule? And he said something about action potentials moving down the T-tubule. So we have to ask ourselves, how does an action potential move down the T-tubule? Is that the same as what I already know about, or is that different? See how these questions just come up all the time. And then what happens? Well, then we saw that everything here is taken care of, and now we continue.
Calcium ions bind to troponin on the thin filaments, causing the troponin-tropomyosin complex in the muscle fiber to undergo a structural change and move. This movement exposes the myosin binding sites on the actin. The myosin heads bind to actin and swivel toward the center of the sarcomere. This power stroke causes the thin actin filaments to slide past the thick myosin filaments.
So tell me what you saw. You saw that tropomyosin move away. You saw a binding site be revealed. You saw the myosin head bind to the binding site, the tropomyosin, and you saw that head move. Right? If that head move, what gave it the energy to move? Kahneman says ATP did. Well, you think it moves anyway, but the ATP is to get off. Well, it can't move without energy. So one of the questions that we might ask is, where did that energy come from? And now we see, if you paid attention to the half a second before this, ATP came on here, and what happened? What happened here? It caused the release from the site. And did you see the head doing anything?
Reset.
Okay? So the head is being moved back to the position it was in. And when that happens, what happened to the ATP?
Hydrolyzed
to give ADP plus phosphate. Where is the energy from the ATP? In which bond? Right now, where is it? In this picture, here there's high energy bond, and here there's not. Where did that energy go?
It's supposed to be cocking it back.
It's supposed to be cocking it back. Because it's on its way.
Okay?
So, and over here, it's returned to there. So he says it's supposed to be cocking it back because that's what the rule book says.
Yeah.
Or maybe it cocks it back because that's what we observe.
The heated power strokes cause the Z-disc of the sarcomere to be drawn together.
So you see that?
The sarcomere shortly.
It's cocking it back.
And the muscle contracts.
So the ATP comes on to help release that. The energy is stored in there. There it is. The halo of energy. The aura of energy. The karma of the energy. Turn that on. There we go.
All right.
So what we see then is a sequence of events, and we had a bunch of questions about where did calcium come from, how did it get in the first place, where is it located. Now, how long do you think those heads are going to be exposed? How long do you think these heads are going to be exposed? How long do you think that's going to tropolysis is going to stay in that position?
As long as there's calcium available.
Okay. Where do you think the calcium might be going?
Back
of the sarcoplasmic reticulum. All right. This is rather interesting. What mechanism would you propose to move that calcium back into the sarcoplasmic reticulum?
Pump.
Why do you think there should be a pump?
Against the gradient.
Against the gradient.
It's going to be active.
Because of what?
It needs to be active.
Why does it need to be active? Oh, it's going against the gradient. Okay, does that make sense? Okay. So if, in fact, the guy was right, and the action potential moves down the T-tubule, which goes in close proximity to the sarcoplasmic reticulum, what do you think happens? In a very general sense, that's similar to what you've talked about before. What do you think is in that membrane of the sarcoplasmic reticulum? Voltage-gated calcium channels.
With time and activation.
Okay. Not with time and activation. With voltage-gated calcium channels. And when are they open? When that action potential comes by, and as it continues to go through, what happens to the gates? They stay open?
No, they're
closed. They have to close. They go back through the threshold. Well, it turns out that those voltage-gated calcium channels are not quite the same physically as the voltage-gated calcium channels that we saw in the presynaptic terminal. There's actually, if you look in your book now, there's actually a name for that molecule, and that molecule is kind of like a spring, and it's pulled, and all kinds of strange things that don't make any sense to me. And why don't they make any sense to me, and why don't I care? I don't care because I'm interested in the act of releasing that calcium. And I'm not really interested in the molecular mechanism by which that happens, because in the kind of problems that I'm going to solve, I'm going to ask myself, does calcium get released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum or not? So that's a neat kind of detail that I might want to find out someday if I get into the molecular business of all this. But for right now, saying that it's a voltage-gated calcium channel works very well for me in this model. Which raises another question that we're going to talk about over and over and over again. All students are interested in, and that's what's truth? What's right? And when we talk about problem solving, we talk about models. What's right is what works to solve the problem. Knowing full well that at some point, I'm going to run into more complex problems where my model is not going to work, and I'm going to have to make my model more complex. So for now, my model of the sarcoplasmic reticulum, if there's a voltage-gated calcium channel, that works fine for all the kind of problems that I need to solve. At some later point, if I find out something about membranes and I need to solve problems about membranes that relate to the specific mechanism of opening that so-called channel, then I'll worry about the details. That's what you need to do in your life. When you're studying all the anatomy detail, you have to ask yourself, what kind of problem do I need to solve? What kind of problem do I need to address? And you look at this detail and you say, do I need to have some idea what that detail is
to solve this kind of problem? If the answer is yes, you want to learn that detail. If the answer is no, forget it. It's just going to occupy time and space in your head that you're trying to pack full of all these things. Fully realize that, okay, maybe at some later point I'll have to know that. But let me wait till the kind of problem, the problem changes, but I can't solve it right now. Okay? Are we good so far? All right. So now we've got this thing. Ratcheting. This is moving in, the other one's moving in, and we're developing. What are the two kinds of results that can happen from that? Shortening, or I can develop a force. In both cases, how would I describe that action? Contraction. Alright. So let's now, let's wait for this. And let's now look at the picture that that shows us what's going on there. And here's this picture. You have that picture in front of you someplace, right? You really don't have to see all the little labels in there. But what we see in this picture is that there's the actin myosin. Here's the troponin. There's the calcium here. Here's the sarcoplasmic reticulum. Here's this T2. And it's the same contraction, the same relaxation. Now, if you look at that picture, and I realize it's difficult to see on this slide, but you have it in front of you. Yes, everybody has it in front of you? Okay. So tell me now, if you look at these labels, tell me what it is that this picture tells you about. Tell me how you would, what information the picture tells you. Pardon? The pathway of calcium. And what is that pathway? Show me. Just show me where you're talking about the pathway of calcium. Starting over there. Okay. Did everybody see the same thing? She said, the calcium is going to come from here. It's going to go down into this space. What is that space? It's the intracellular fluid, right? It's the cytosol. And I'm going to see calcium here. And then she said the calcium is going to move here. And it's going to bind the troponin. And then something's going to happen where it's going to come off. And then it's going to go back in over here. Well, I have a problem with this particular model. And the reason I have a problem with that particular model is because, in my mind, this sodium-potassium pump, this calcium pump, actually is kind of in the middle. And the reason that I say that is because it takes a certain amount of time to repackage that calcium and move it back over here to the lateral sac or the cistern because before it becomes available to move through those voltage-gated channels. So the voltage-gated channels are kind of in this region and in that region, and I see this calcium is going in here and moving to the lateral sac. That's a finite time that it takes. Okay. And what was interesting in this conversation, what was interesting in that description, is the word then. Okay. Calcium comes out of here and goes into the cytosol, and then it diffuses down here and binds And then something happens and it comes off and then it moves back in. What really happens? It's all happening at the same time. And it's very important to recognize that it's all happening at the same time. So, why does calcium move in that direction? Louder? A gradient. Because the concentration in this reservoir increased. And the concentration in the reservoir increased because more calcium came in than left. So more calcium came in than left. Here's what's left in. And so this reservoir increased and caused then a gradient to move calcium in this direction. And why did the calcium bind? This is another general model we're talking about. Why is the calcium binding? Because this is a binding site for it. And the concentration was high enough that it's going to hit the binding site. If all of this is going on at the same time, when does this pump? When is this pump active? All the time. So what's happening to this pool? If I put in this quantum, if I put in this amount of calcium, calcium diffuses in here during the time that channel is open. What's happening with this pump? It's pumping. Good job. Okay, it's pumping. And so, after that channel closes, what happens to the level in the reservoir? It decreases. And why? Because the rate of movement out is greater than the rate of movement in, and that decreases. So, when does calcium come off of this troponin? Yeah, is it removed? Did something come on and ruin it? Okay, you're all done here. You're done. Well, no, it's not an enzyme. It's not an enzyme.
It's when the concentration of calcium is low enough.
Okay. When the calcium concentration gets low enough, then the intramolecular forces pushing it on are less than the intermolecular forces tending to move it off, and the calcium comes off. If that happens, what happens to the binding sites? Well, they're always associated, but the tropomyosin is reconfigured. What happens to the binding sites? They get covered up. So now we have, this is neat. What's going to happen next? Down here, what's going to happen to the actinomyosin next? Myosin's not going to have anywhere to bind anymore. Not going to be connected, so what's going to happen? Charles?
Recoil.
It's going to recoil. What's going to recoil? Not the myosin heads. Not the actin filament.
The titan.
The elastic components. Elastic components in that muscle. Okay? So here we have, we need some elastic components. Let's go here. You hold that. You hold that. Okay? Can everybody see? No, stand up. No, you just hold it. Okay. Okay, you gotta come over here so everybody can see. Okay, we're good. No, come with me. Come with me. Okay. Here we are. It's some resting length. Okay? here we are at some resting lake, and you just hold tight. And now the actin and myosin are going to interact. And that sarcomere shortens. Okay? And what happens if the ratchet can no longer hold the two pieces together?
Recoils.
It recoils. Now let's do this. Okay? So here we go. Calcium is coming along. This is actually better than before because now we can see ratchet. Okay? And so now, if I release the binding between this filament and that filament, what happens is the recoil of those elastic fibers is going to pull it open there. And so we have contraction and we have relaxation.
Can I do it on the
overhead? All right. Let's try this. Now let's go over here. We're going to do this on the overhead.
Oh, man.
Okay, you got to move away from there. And here we are. We're going to do this on the overhead.
I agree with that.
No, you gotta move up. Move back.
Will you turn the light on?
No, we can't do it on the overhead.
What if you turn your light on?
That's not the problem.
It's not relevant.
Okay.
The problem is that you can't see this. Okay. Face that way, Juliet. They want to see the crossed hands. How did I do that?
Okay, now we
got to turn. Okay, ready? Okay. Calcium comes in. Ratchet. Calcium leaves, and those ratchets now stop binding. And so those recoil and relax.
My past knowledge is, I guess, getting away in this model.
Yeah, well, that's right.
That kind of happens a lot of times. Yeah. But I always thought that it had to ratchet back.
No, it doesn't ratchet back.
Okay.
Because it releases, it gets pulled back.
And so, they were active,
right? Didn't no. No. They were the elastic components. They were like the Titan and the other series elastic components that are getting pulled.
Because when it relaxes, your arms are crossed over.
And then they get pulled apart.
So when you relax, it's like this.
When I was relaxed, it was like this. If this is actin and this is myosin, when the muscle fiber is relaxed, then there's not as much overlap and there's no binding.
Can you say
actin and myosin?
I know what
it
looks like.
Can
I
have
somebody
else?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, here we go. Okay. Let's go over here. Myosin, actin. Okay? So, that's all I'm going to do is, heads bind. Actin moves. Myosin moves. Actin moves. Now there's another head that's binding, moving, another head that's binding, moving, and when that no longer is able to hook on, then the recoil of the pieces that are out there are going to pull it back. Yeah, so what we've done in this case is that the Titan really shows that it's attached to the Z-line. The Z lines are moving in. Okay? Fine. Let's look at this model. Let's look at this model. Well, maybe. So here we have a model of that whole thing, and we're now looking at a functional model. Okay? We're looking at a functional model, and what we see here is actinomycin sliding filament. So when that gets engaged and there's calcium around, this gets pulled in here, that gets pulled in here, and what happens to this spring? It gets stretched. And so if I let go of those connections, what's the spring going to do? It's going to recoil. Okay? And the recoil said, if I fix this point and that point, when I pull this together, I don't change the length of the whole muscle, but I do change the force between the two ends because this is being pulled. It's trying to recoil. So this is in the same configuration as the titan. These are other elastic elements that are in parallel with that actinomycin. And we'll see what happens with that when we get to that point. They alternate. That's right. That's right. If they were all binding at the same time, then when they all released, the muscle would get recoiled, would get pulled back. And so you'd be going like this all the time. That's not what happened. The other thing that she saw, and if I look here, you see there's actin going down this way, there's actin on this one, there's actin on this one, there's actin on this one. So they're arranged in a hexagonal way, which means that as this one pulls forward, this one might be recocking, pulling forward, swing. And so you're seeing a three-dimensional kind of thing where they're pulling, like you're pulling a rope in a tug of war. Charles?
So when we're stretching,
so the question is, when we're stretching, what are we doing? Well, are we actively contracting the muscle? Not in this model. In this model, what we're doing is pulling the connections of the muscles here and there, so we're pulling ligaments and tendons. Agree with that? Does that make sense to you? Yep.
I understand this picture, but I'm looking at the picture that's on E7, figure A. It looks like the titan's like actually attached to the myosin. Is that not actually the case? Is that just...
That one?
No.
Which one?
That one?
Yeah, so the tight,
I mean, so there, it's like, if the sarcomere was supposed to shorten, it almost looks like it would compress
the
spring. And so that is confusing.
Well, that's true. But what we're looking at, one sarcomere. There's another one here, and another one here, and another one there. And so, even if this is pulling in that direction, okay? The other one over here is pulling in that direction. So it really doesn't make any difference if you're looking at this and saying it compresses or it stretches. Either way, it's moving it from its resting point, the resting position, and it's going to exhibit recoil. And when it exhibits recoil, where is that recoil going to take it?
Back
to its resting position. So you can think about it either way. Yep.
Are my feelings, yeah, okay.
question is, if I have this, if I have a bunch of myofibers, are they going the wrong way? If I have this sarcomere and this sarcomere and another sarcomere down here, are all these going to interact at the same time? So what does that depend on? Depends on the availability of calcium to these mechanisms. So if you're talking about a particular muscle cell that's calcium is being released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum into that muscle cell, and you're going to end up having all the sarcomeres in that muscle cell contracting at the same time. We'll come back to that in a little bit. Okay. All right. Are we good with all this?
Yeah.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. I want to take another couple of minutes, even though it's time for your break. I want to take a couple of minutes to look at what happens at the neuromuscular junction. And then we'll take a break and go downstairs and actually work on the model of muscle contraction. Is that okay? So now, here's the synapse. Here's the synapse that we call the neuromuscular junction. So here's the neuron, here's the motor neuron, this is the axon of motor neuron, this is the presynaptic terminal. And is that what's going on there any different than what we talked about for synapses between axons and dendrites? Acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter. Can I have acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter in a neuronal synapse? Yes, I can. Okay? What else? Nothing else? So here's what happens then. According to what we said the other day, the action potential gets propagated down here, and as it passes by here, what happens? What happens? Why do the vesicles get released? Because voltage-gated calcium channels open. As the voltage-gated calcium channels open, because the calcium concentration out here is higher than inside the cell, calcium comes in, binds to the vesicles, helps them move to the membrane, and acetylcholine gets released. And what happens to it then? Diffuses across. It diffuses actually in all directions where there's a gradient, right? So some of it might actually diffuse over here and over here, where some of it might be taken back up, we're not going to talk about that a lot, by that presynaptic terminal and get recycled. Depending on the neurotransmitter, depending on the cell. But you said, okay, it's going to diffuse across, and what's going to happen over here? It's going to bind to the receptors. And what's going to happen after it binds the receptors? It's going to open what? It's going to open some channels. Now, these channels have to be a little different than other channels we've talked about, because those channels allow both sodium and potassium through the channel. But sodium movement through that channel is more than the potassium movement through the channel. So we'll ignore the potassium. And what's going to happen when sodium moves in to this region? Now, this is a specialized region of the cell that's going to be called the motor end plate. There's a neuromuscular junction. There's a motor end plate. So this membrane is different than the membrane over here and over here. So what do you think is going to happen? I'm going to open sodium channels, and what's going to happen? Sodium comes in. And it depolarizes right here. So now if we get our reporters back, and our reporter is standing right here, and he looks up, what does he see? throwing coming at him. And if he looks to the right, what does he see? Sodium going this way because now there's a positive charge gradient. What does he see this way? So, but the positive charge is moving that way. And if he stands out here and he looks around, he sees sodium going in. Does he see sodium moving toward him from anywhere? Where? From here, from here. What happens over here then? Becomes less positive, or does it become more positive? If I'm looking at the membrane potential, I'm looking at the difference across the membrane, and what you're telling me is the positives are coming over here, and positives are moving away from here, so the membrane potential is going to get more positive or more negative?
Positive.
More positive. Okay. What do you think lives out here that doesn't live right here?
Voltage-gated,
sodium channels, the kinetic activation gates. All right. So why is there no action potential right here?
Because there are no channels.
Because there are no sodium, voltage-gated sodium channels with kinetic activation. Why does it start here? Because there are voltage-gated sodium channels with kinetic activation gates and voltage-gated potassium channels. So I'm going to see an action potential here. Essentially the same kind of pattern as I saw in the next one. And now what do you think that T-tubule is?
It's going to act like an axon, right?
So what do you see here? What is this piece right here? That's the membrane, right? Does it say membrane there? It says... It's muscle plasma membrane. This line is a muscle plasma membrane. And where does it go? Plunges down into the cell. So this, how does this membrane differ from that membrane? It's the same. It doesn't differ. So when the action potential gets propagated along here, gets propagated down here, gets propagated down here, comes across there and causes these voltage-gated calcium channels to open and you release the calcium. Yep. That's the T-tubule. It's called the T-tube because it looks like a T.
So you have the sodium pumps all along and you get down to the T-tubule and now you've got sodium and calcium pumps? Or just the calcium voltage-gated
pumps? Question is, what about sodium potassium pumps? Sodium potassium pumps are all in this membrane, and they're keeping, in essence, the sodium concentration gradient from the outside to the inside of the cell fairly constant, and the potassium concentration from the inside to the outside fairly constant. There are no calcium calcium pumps in this membrane, but there are calcium pumps in the sarcoplasmic reticular membrane. So there are no sodium potassium ATPase pumps in the sarcoplasmic reticulum membrane. But there are calcium pumps.
So what's the communication between the membrane of the T-tubule to the sarcoplasmic? I mean, is there a depolarization of the sarcoplasmic reticulum, or is that just another?
Well, the question is there depolarization of the sarcoplasmic reticulum when an action potential comes down here? As the action potential comes down here, you'll notice that there's going to be more of a positive charge in this cytosol here than there was over here. So that's going to depolarize that piece of membrane and cause that, if it's a multi-gated channel, to open up. Is this making sense to you?
Yes. So the calcium, this is straight, the calcium... gated channel, or the voltage-gated calcium channels are the sarcoplasmic reticulum, and that's uptaking the calcium from the cell membrane? Or
no.
Okay, so then there's no calcium channels outside of the membrane, or in the muscle cell membrane. How's the calcium getting... Oh, you said you don't know where it comes from.
No, I said initially I don't know where it comes from.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how it got in there in the first place. But what you're seeing now is there's a pool of calcium that's inside that cell. Part of it is in the cytosol, and part of it is in the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And that calcium moves from the sarcoplasmic reticulum to the cytosol and back into the sarcoplasmic reticulum. It's all within the cell.
So then when you're opening the calcium gate, you're letting the calcium out of the sarcoplasmic reticulum, you're not drawing it.
That's right.
That's right. Okay.
Because why is it going this way and not that way? Because there's an abundance of it inside, and the other way of saying that is because there's a gradient to move it inside. Which also tells you why this has to be active. Because now it's working against the gradient. Okay? Okay. So what we're going to do is, are there any questions about any of that?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, go. Talked about before, this is positive charges moving. They came in, and now there's a greater concentration of positive charges here than there is over here, so they're going to diffuse this way. They're also going to diffuse over that way. And if we're standing up here, if in fact I'm losing sodium from in this region, then I've created a gradient for sodium positive charges to move from here into here, from here into here. As a result of that, this piece of membrane is going to be depolarized. And the voltage gated sodium channels and time and activation beams are going to be triggered with them. Any other thing? Anything else? Okay, so let's meet downstairs at about 20 after. And then we'll spend a couple minutes talking about what we want to do.
Bike ride. Wow.
And then we're going to